Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Central Stadium, an iconic sporting venue. As part of a major fundraising drive, My Stadium Seat is offering you the chance to place your name or the name of someone who loves GAA on a seat at the Field of Legends. Packages from €100 include seat naming plaques, certs of authenticity, online biographies, and open day tickets. Show your support or make someone's Christmas. Visit mystadiumseat.com. Temple Stadium, where every name matters.
Hello and welcome to episode 67 of the Premier League Tipperary GAA podcast. On tonight's show, we'll be talking about the return of the hurlers and the footballers to action, while we'll also be discussing how the Tip schools fared in the Harty Cup quarterfinals. We also have an excellent interview from one of our two new contributors, Thomas Conway, who sat down for a chat with former Tipperary and Nina hurler Conor O'Donovan. Tonight, I'm joined by the ever-present Sean Smith of Turtle Sarsfields. Stephen Cronin and Carrick Bavins. I nearly said Swans there. Jesus, he'd have murdered me. And we have another Sars man on board because we're badly stuck in the form of Jamie Barrett. How are things, lads?
All good.
Right, sure, lads. We'll get straight into it. A really bad start to the year for the hurlers at the weekend. Probably not one where anyone would have expected, even with the team that we had out. Defeat to Kerry, 17 points to 14. First competitive defeat, and it's against Kerry, Jamie. It's not ideal, is it? Even though it really doesn't mean anything in the great scheme of things, but
it's not ideal, you know. But I'm sure Colin Bonner would have liked to have his first competitive match a win as opposed to a 3-point defeat for the first time ever to Kerry. I suppose the bigger story from our point of view is Willie Connors. He's a massive loss going forward. He's a great panel member. You know, he would have been pushing hard, I'd say, for a start maybe this year with Colin Bonner because he brings work rate and attitude that Colin Bonner would have had himself on the field. But look, it's a 3-point defeat, a lot of new faces. Kerry were missing a few as well, which probably surprised us even more, you know what I mean? But look, it's hard travel 2.5 hours down the road and play a hurling match in heavy conditions as well. So we won't shout Bonner out yet.
And it's maybe not as bad as years gone by, Stephen. Like, Kerry have proven that they're a fairly competitive team all in the Joe McDonough the last few years, and they have improved. While we still would have expected to beat them, but maybe they deserve some dues as well.
Yeah, definitely, yeah. I suppose, look, so we spoke about this before Christmas, just the time of the year it is, and we even spoke to, did we even want to be in this competition? And look, because it was competition, everybody knows about it. But if this was behind closed doors, nobody would give a damn about it. I don't mean that to be disrespectful to Kerry, but it is what it is. Like, there was a lot of new faces there, a lot of lads, and in fairness to them, they put their hand up there, they gave it their all, but there's a lot of lads there we don't expect to be on the panel come the summertime. And so, like, it was a tough day out for them. you know, it was a defeat in the competition, and unfortunately for us, just Tipperary. So we kind of, we might read a little bit too much into it when we shouldn't really, you know.
I was just about to ask it, Jamie, how much do we read into it? Like, will it have any effect on the players going forward, or will they just push it off?
It might. I suppose, look, as Stephen said, not everyone's going to be part of the panel when it comes to the championship, like, but there's a few lads would have been looking to kind of stake a claim as a panellist more so than a starter, you know what I mean? And it doesn't seem that too many of them put their hand up, you know, which is disappointing. You'd have liked to see guys, you know, even one or two stake a claim, you know. The likes of Gerard Brown, he'll be there or thereabouts, I think, anyway. But, like, with erratic shooting that he had last weekend, that's not going to help his case either, you know what I mean? I wouldn't be panicking, really, you know what I mean? It's nice to get a competitive game. It's a pity to lose, but, look, you have to move on. If you went down with a full-strength team, you'd be Kerry out the gate. We all know that, so you can't be panicking either. Like,
anyone stick out in the game for you lads, or was it a complete shit show, to put it, for lack of a better phrase? Was there anything beneficial in it for us?
Well, I unfortunately didn't get to see it myself. We were training ourselves, and I got home at half-time, and I wasn't paying a tenner at half-time for us. So, I suppose I'm kind of glad I didn't see it, because even though my own self, I'm thinking, look, tis Kerry, tis January, don't get worked, you'd be bulling watching it. And so I didn't get to see it now, just reading the reports anyway. So I can't really give too much on it.
Yeah, same as that, Stephen. I didn't see much of it. I was watching Buff Egan's Snapchat, all right, but yeah, between the jigs and the reels and all his different statements and mannerisms, I suppose it's hard to concentrate in the game. And a lot of his clips were Kerry clips, to be fair. Now, he did show one or two tip scores, but like I said, Joe Brown's erratic shooting was kind of to the fore more than anything else. But look, I wasn't going, like yourself, I was busy. I didn't get into half time, so that's why I was catching up with Buff. But I don't know, look, we've onwards and upwards, you know, next game is the league and we have to start winning, you know.
Would it be harsh to judge the new lads on the panel based on just one game, or do you have to keep giving them chances? Or do you think a defeat to Kerry is just where you draw the line and say that the standards have to be better than that?
Well, I wouldn't end it, to be honest. I'd certainly give them another chance, you know what I mean? Colin Bonner called them in for a reason. He didn't call them in just to make up numbers. Now, I know with COVID, he'll probably have to call in one or two, but I would certainly give them another chance. They deserve at least a fighting chance to stake their claim, you know what I mean? You put in one or two more season guys in around them, it makes it a different team, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I don't think anyone should be written off after that one game, because, look, I know we have back onto times, but we don't know the type of training that they're doing leading into that match, you know, and people react differently to it. Like, they could have had a heavy session that week. People react differently. Where I think they should be judged, and where I hope they're being judged, is amongst themselves when they're until the league starts. When they're playing the mixed matches amongst themselves, like, they're marking lads that are as good, if not better than them. And, you know, if our tip training sessions are not at that intensity where you can look and judge a lad, then we're doing something wrong. And then they earn the chance in the league games by what they do on the training field. And that's where I think, I don't think one match you should rate a fell off. And plus, soft ground, heavy, dirty, you know, it's mulligan. It's this time of year, it's just all about a war, basically. And, you know, and if we were to judge players on wars, we'd probably be down 5 or 6 All-Ireland winners the last few years, you know. We'd have thrown them off the panel years ago. So I think what they do in training now for the next few weeks, leading into the National League, then they should be judged.
Yeah,
and 100%.
Yeah, you mentioned the National League there. We've Laois in the first game on the 5th of February. Can we see many of the new faces from that game getting another shot? How do you think Bonner will approach it? Will he bring in a few more established players, do you think?
I think he will, yeah. And I think he'd be foolish not to bring in a few established players and trying to bolster the centre of the team, spine of the team. Not necessarily Shamie Callanan, but surely the likes of Jason Ford might get a run out. Ronan Maher might get a run out, you know what I mean? Just have a strong spine, and it gives a bit of security to the lads that are there only for the first or second game, or say lads are on the panel for the second year. That, you know, a bit of assurance when you have an established team member inside you.
Yeah. And the new lads coming into the panel, there's going to be nerves there. Mm. There's going to be nerves for a long time. Like, you know, questions, do I deserve to be here? Like, should I be here? All these things. Normally, I would look at the Laois game and say, now is the time to play a lot of the fellas. But then with the whole Kerry result, if they go out and have a tough day against Laois, like to Tipperary, we're panicking then, you know. And so I think bring back some of the bigger names, and hopefully they can do the business as well. But in small little pods, give these lads the games. Don't throw out 12 new starters against Laois. It's not going to be any good for them. It's not going to be any good for Tip going forward.
Yeah, dead right, Stephen. I think you need to kind of filter in three or four lads for every round of the league, and they all get exposure. And if they get two or three matches each, well and good. But if you're putting your hand up, you'll probably get more. If you're not, then you won't. It's up to you to earn the opportunity to play as well. You know, Colin Bonner doesn't have to give you a game because he called you into the panel. Mm-hmm. You know, simple as that, really.
And today was made even worse, lads, with Willie Connors getting a fairly nasty injury. He's one lad. Look, he's been kind of on the fringes of starting most matches the last few years, but he's a great player to be coming off the bench because he can cover so many positions. Yeah. And with Niall O'Meara and Brian O'Meara gone this year, he's going to be a loss as the championship progresses, isn't he?
Oh, yeah. I think Willie offers so much. It hasn't quite worked out for him as a starter, but he's so valuable. He's so valuable as part of the panel. And we see the impact he has there in when he was coming off the bench, you know. And first of all, I want to wish him a speedy recovery. Like, you know, this serious injury, nobody wants to see that happen to anyone. And but I think he's the disappointment from his own self, obviously, didn't, but he was probably looking new management here now. I'm going to stake a claim for a starting spot. And that's had to been taken away from him now with a nasty injury. And then from the Tip perspective, we're going to be down an extremely valuable player this year for Tipperary. He's very, very valuable player for Tip.
Yeah, his versatility and everything. We have a few lads maybe that you might have earmarked at the start of the year. Sean Ryan started the game. Yeah, absolutely lit up the club championship. Craig Morgan, Rian Doody. These are lads surely need another twist. They just have shown a lot of potential in the Miller Shield and in the championship to date, and we need an influx of younger players, don't we?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, Craig Morgan's an All-Ireland winning captain. Like, he deserves a fair crack at the whip, you know what I mean? Likewise, Sean Ryan was one of the top forwards in the county last year in the Senior A and the Senior B, two very competitive competitions, and he was top scorer, joint top scorer, whatever, you know what I mean? So they deserve more than one crack at the whip, to be fair to them. Mm. Owen Connolly, the same. There's a few guys there that need to kind of step up a little bit now. They've been, you know, they've two All-Ireland medals, one at under-20-21 level. You'd like to see them start pushing the likes of Ron and Porrick and these guys. And they might not oust them, but like, they're certainly going to be there. We pick up another nasty injury there from one of our key players, and we start to panic very quickly, you know what I mean? We have cover in the forwards, I think, with John McGrath back to his best, you know, and Noel seems to be hurling well. Seamus Callan moving okay, you know, so Jason Ford likewise. Like, but we need the younger guys to start pushing through. Like,
Stephen, what do you think Bonner needs to address going into the league? Is it a case of just getting that new personnel in, or does he need to address the game plan, or is it a bit of both? What's his priority for the league?
Yeah, last year under Liam, I felt we were going down the route of having a kind of a game plan, moving away from for the last couple of years previous, the year previous, we were just hitting and hoping, kind of, it felt like. And then we were going down a game plan route last year, and it's like, guys, we focus on the short puckouts, shorter, or, you know, find the man. But it just felt to me then, after that phase, what was next? And I didn't feel like there was a plan where, like, we know what Limerick style hurling is. You see them a mile away. You could turn the telly black and white and you know who Limerick are. I don't think we have that Tipperary. Back in 2010, we had it. Back in 2016, you could see Tipperary a mile away. But I don't think we know what way Tipperary are hurling anymore. And I think that has to be addressed. There has to be a certain style that our plan A, and we know what we're doing. We're going to execute it, and it's up to you to stop it. There are times you're wondering, do we know what we're doing? You know, like, it's all well and good the keeper hitting a lovely arrow pass to the halfback, but what happens then? You know, and I just don't think we're so far behind in that regard to a lot of other teams that I think that's something we do need to address now going forward this year.
Are we hurling off the cuff, Stephen, do you think?
I think so.
Game plan.
Yeah, I think a lot. Like, I love the tradition of Tipperary. Like, we don't play sweeper. We don't play, you know, like, we are a throwback ourselves and the Kenny. You know, we're a throwback, and I do love it. But you can still be a throwback and have a blueprint for the game you want to play. You know, like, if you're going to give the ball to Ronan Maher there, the halfback, and he's just going to launch it up into the sky to Shamey Callanan or Jason Ford every single time, that's not good enough. That's, you're going too far back, too traditional. You know, there has to be what we did in 2000 and was it 16 when Shamey got the 9 points from play, was it? We developed a game plan there that got the best out of the best forward in Ireland at the time. And we have some excellent forwards, and I don't think we're doing enough in our game to get the best out of our forwards.
But taking your point there, that game plan was based on movement. And you only get movement through effort and honesty and work rate. Mm. You don't get movement through stagnation and guys standing in the corner waiting for a nice pass.
Yeah.
And all that honesty and effort in 2016 opened Kilkenny wide up, and they couldn't do anything about it because they didn't know how to handle it. That kind of, it came back again in 19 a bit, but look, we've played two kind of COVID championships and it hasn't suited the weather and whatever excuses you want. But the attitude hasn't been there from what I could see in the forward division. And John McGrath's form was poor in 2020. That didn't help us either. He's a marquee forward. We needed him. We needed his movement and his cuteness. And, you know, when you don't have that, then other guys start to suffer as well, you know.
Are the players we have still capable of playing that game, Jamie? Because we've kind of had the same profile of player since 2016, 2019. Is it a case of they can't get around the pitch that bit easier than they used to be able?
Well, certainly looking at Shamey Callanan last year running into corners chasing balls against Waterford was absolutely pointless. I mean, he's running into the corner himself.
Yeah.
He was never going to get them. Like, yeah. The ball needs to be put in front of him, take it out, yeah. Turn and go.
That's the point I'm trying. Like,
yeah.
We're on about honesty and effort. Like, there's effort. 100 mile. Like, you can see the mile, but we're making him run into the corner flag. That's, you know, crazy. Shamey's running to wherever the ball is going. He's just working like it up. That's kind of off the cuff. That's natural work that's coming out too. I'm on about his running should be efficient. You know, like if we're
like 19, 16. That was efficient.
If we're getting Shamey to run to the corner flag, you're asking him to go to the corner flag, get the ball and come back out the field to create or get the score. Like, if you're when poking the ball to the corner flag is no good to our forward line, and it doesn't matter how fast or how quick or how much rotation goes on the forward line, a ball to the corner flag is no good. The diagonal ball, the ball in front of you, like the few scores Shamey got into, they were towards the sideline, but he was coming onto them.
Exactly.
He wasn't running away from, like, you know, if you get what I'm saying, and he was able to, the angle was there for him. I just don't think, like, you can have lads running around the field all day and could be getting the greatest effort in the world, but if it's not practiced, rehearsed, and understood, it's pointless, you know.
How
is Bonner going to approach, I was as surprised as anyone when Bonner was named as the manager, he'll be the first to admit he wasn't first choice. If we had to get Cahill in, I think we would have a fair idea of what sort of game we'd be playing. Just the modern type of hurling, running with the ball, throwing it off the shoulder, just pure engines all over the pitch. How is Bonner going to approach it? Is he going to be that similar mould, or is he going to be more old school again? And is what we need a bit more of the Cahill style, the kind of Limerick style of running the ball?
I don't know that we need all the running with the ball, but I think Bonner will bring a lot of work rate, because his own game when he was a player was work rate. Do you know what I mean? So it'll be about attitude first and work rate. We all know they can hurl, but if they can't work or they don't want to work, well, then he's not going to play them. I can't see him playing them, you know. I would say, I think the likes of Shamey will start. He probably will. Depends how the league goes, I suppose, but he will play to his strengths. He's not going to have Seamus Cannon running around the field. You know, Jason Ford and John McGrath and Jake Morris and whoever else running around the field, creating space or creating holes. And if Ger Brown gets a start, Ger Brown's pace is frightening. So when the ground is hard, that's when Ger Brown is going to be deadly for us. Like he showed in 2019, breaking through. He eats up ground when he's moving forward. He doesn't have to be a big man. Can't hit him if you can't catch him. So
yeah, that's it.
You know, I think work rate will be like Liam Cahill. Work rate will be the first thing Bonner will want, and go from there. You know,
Stephen. Like realistically, we could. Like a lot of Tip fans, you know, they want that idea that if you're not producing it in training, you shouldn't be playing. But realistically, we could have name 8 or 9 certain starters come championship, couldn't we?
Yeah, yeah, I think so. Like, and in fairness to the lads, they are still doing the business, you know. But like, just what we want is Marky Ho now. We want Marky Ho pushing one of these lads out. Not that we want to get rid of, but we want Marky Ho now at his stage now, at his age, we want Marky Ho needs to be starting for Tipperary next year. You know, not and not because someone that's ahead of him is lacking work rate. Mark is at this stage now where he's a young man. He'll bring a lot of energy. He's very fit, very fast. But now is the time that the likes of Marky Ho and a few boys that are around the same age, now is the time that they need to be. Look, let's be honest. Shamey Callan is, 33 years of age?
33, yeah.
30, you know. And as brilliant as he is, Shamey needs to feel Marky Ho now breathing down his neck, or he needs to be going out in the training field. Right, I better be at him now tonight because Marky Ho is looking for my spot. You know, and that's where we want all our players. Now, we were lucky now. We got Shamey, we got Toddy, Brendan Maher, we got all these lads around at one time, Norm McGrath. That's a freak phenomenon. That's not going to happen again. And it's not going to happen again for a long, long time. But if you have lads that, which has gone now down to systems now and game plans, if you have lads, very good hurlers that can execute a brilliant game plan, that'll make up for your, like, where the likes of Mark Yeo might not be the once in a lifetime Shamey Callan, or, you know, but he'll fit a Bonner game plan and he has the skills and the fitness to execute it. That's where I think we need it. We need to have our plan A game plan perfect, you know, and so these lads can come in. We might not never see the like of a Noel McGrath ever again, but we need lads that will be able to come in and try and push them off the team because they can execute our game plan or do what we want to do. And they have, might not be as skillful as Noel McGrath, but they're talented and they have the fitness and the understanding of what we want and what, Con Bonner wants him to do, you know. We want all these lads under pressure next year.
Jamie, you kind of mentioned Mark Yeo there as a lad to step up. Is there?
Absolutely.
Jake Morris and maybe Craig Morgan. Is there anyone else who do you think should be stepping up at this stage?
Mark Yeo is definitely one. You go back to Liam Cahill's 2 All-Irelands with Tip. Billy Seymour was someone I thought would definitely light up the scene for us going forward. Now he's gone backwards a little bit, which is a pity because he's big and strong and fast. You know, Craig Morgan, Owen Connolly, I'd like to see Owen Connolly step forward. Brian O'Mara, if he gets back fully fit, was certainly looking like a championship starter at times last year. But you never know. I don't know after that. There's so much talent on those 2 All-Ireland winning teams.
I don't know about you lads, but I Conor Bow is on the panel this year and I can't wait to see him in the tip tournament.
Conor Bow, yeah, absolutely. Conor Bow, yeah, how could I forget? Yeah. Big, strong, mobile, aggressive as well, you know what I mean? There's a little bit of a bite in him. Any of the games I've seen him in, you know, is a lethal finisher as well, which is what we want, you know what I mean? I thought Mark Yeo was brilliant last year when he came on in the Munster final against Limerick. You know, I thought he heard very well. If he can step up and likes Conor Bow can start pushing forward as well, that's why you don't be panicking over Kerry. There's lots of opportunity there for young fellas to step up. You know, you have 5 or 6 league games coming up. Lots of training sessions. The season is relatively short, really.
Yeah.
So you're either able to impress or not. So they have to take their chance, simple as that.
Absolutely. And sure, the first game is against Laois, and we'll do another preview as we get closer to that in the next couple of weeks. So we'll move on to the football now, lads. I didn't see it myself. I don't know if any of you seen it. I think it was on Club, or was it? But they played Limerick in the first game and came out of that with the team they had out. They came out with a 1-point win, 112-14 points. Yeah. Jack Kennedy from JK Bracken scoring the winner at the end. I think he scored 2 points in the end.
He got the last two.
To win it. That was a good result considering the players we had missing, I suppose, because we've struggled against Limerick in the last couple of years in Championship and League.
Yeah, I think I think Tip are going to struggle this year. I think they're going to struggle. Some of the main men from down the years, some of the real big leaders, they're getting older now, and with Michael Quinlan then finished up, that's going to be a savage loss for Tipperary going forward this year. I think what, like the Limerick result aside, I think we're going to struggle this year.
Yeah, and obviously, as you say that, we got bit by Kerry last night, 123-5 points in Templetuohy. It's hard to know how you look at that result. When you look at the two teams, Tip probably had only five or six starters, I think, from Championship last year versus Kerry, who, bar Paddy Clifford, had an absolute Championship standard team out.
Yeah.
Who's going to benefit more in the long run? Kerry beating a 50% strength Tip team, or a Tip team with a lot of new faces playing against probably one of the best teams in the country?
It's hard to know, isn't it? Like, you look at Tyrone were beaten by Cavan by 15 points the other day as well. Do you know, like, did Tyrone put out a weakened team? I don't know, but like, it's a real back to earth kind of situation for them. But Kerry beating the shit out of Tipperary in Templetuohy in January, I don't see that as a way forward for them. Like, surely they should have been blooding new players as well themselves. They have plenty of talent down there. Are they peaking already in January? You know, 6 months to go to an All-Ireland final. Like, they brought in two players that played Sigerson Cup yesterday as well, which was absolutely madness. Crazy, you know what I mean? They were up playing UCD, I think, in football, and drove to Templetuohy and then come out for 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Like, you pick up a hamstring injury there very easily and you're out for 2 months. It's just made no sense to me, you know. Very
last night's game, and with the Sigerson Cup last, it's real, it really smells like a... I'm manager and I want my players all the time. And I want to win every game. Like, just when you asked about who's benefit more, like, you'd be thinking Kerry have a training panel that we go back to Tipperary in the Limericks, that they'll be judged on their training, how they're training against each other. Like, if they're being judged on a Tip game and then coming up and hammering the shit out of Tipperary midweek with a very, very strong team. Like, is it all these lads thinking, right, I need my spots, I'm going to be brilliant against Tipperary, or is it the manager, I want to win every game possible, you know, and I want to hammer everyone? As I said, Tyrone were best hammered last week. I don't know. Like, I just hope, for Tip's point of view, that the next game isn't the hammer, and the next game isn't the hammer, because these, you know, lack of confidence going into the year ahead is nearly as bad as losing players.
They definitely need a bowl of confidence after the year they had last year. They have Leitrim in the first game. I think that's in Simple Stadium. Look, they struggled against Leitrim last year. I think they beat them up in Carrick and Shannon. So that's not going to be an easy game for them. But they need to get out of Division 4, don't they, Stephen? Absolutely have to.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, Leitrim down in Simple Stadium, you know, it's a fair trek for Leitrim to be coming down. You know, what way do we do it early in the year? Are they coming down the morning of the match? Because I say from Torles, must be 3.5 hours easy.
Yeah.
You know, so it's a long spin on a bus, then to get out, play a match. You'd be hoping Tipperary got off to a good start against Leitrim. You know, you'd be expecting them to. If they want to get out of the division, they have to get off to a good start against Leitrim.
Yeah, so that match is on the 6th of February on Sunday in Central Stadium. Hopefully they get off to a good start. We're going to move on now, lads, to the Hardy Cup action there the last week and a half. We'll go back to last Saturday. Turles CBS and Cashel Community School played in the quarter final at Tip Derby there. Turles coming out on top, 3-16-13 points. Did you see this match, lads?
No, but I was reading reports on it, and I was surprised with the margin of victory, to be honest. Like, Turles kind of stumbled over the line against Flannans. Cashel bet Flannans pretty well. Turles turned around and beat Cashel by 12 points then a couple of weeks later. Mm. Now, I know Turles were fairly full strength as far as I'm aware. Mm. But I'd say they're probably still not considered favourites or anywhere near it for the Hardy Cup yet. But if you look through the team, it's a very, very strong team. You know, it's as strong as they've had for the last number of years. But I'd say Cashel didn't expect that margin of defeat. Certainly, you know.
Judging by the results going in, it was... probably geared up as a close match.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
But look, they've got some... I know they're probably not as strong as, like, traditional teams that have won Hearties down the years, but they've likes of Leamy there and Dara Staclum and Joe Caesar, like they're good hurlers on that
team. They're senior hurlers, like, you know.
Yeah.
You know, they're playing against young lads in a lot of positions, like, so they're going to stand out.
Will they fancy their chances from here, Jamie?
Arscoleraish
in the semi, yeah.
Yeah, like they've been fairly consistent there the last number of years. Like with the rise of Limerick, Arscoleraish has been in the middle of that as well. Like, so I would say Arscoleraish would be favourites, to be honest. But they need big games from all their big players, Orlis, which, look, isn't impossible either, like, but it's a big ask. We'll have to wait and see, I suppose. Jack Leamy and Dara Staclum will have to be on fire. Likewise, Joe Caesar, centre-back, was very good last day. They'll need to be tight at the back, and they need to be fairly scoring free at the front, you know.
And we're joined by Sean Smith about 25 to 30 minutes late. How are you, Sean?
Good, yourself.
Nice to join us.
Hi,
got caught up late afternoon, then it all came on top.
did you see the Turley CBS game?
Didn't know. I was meant to go get a ticket, sure, to sold out. And then went to log in the stream and I come from my car details. So I just gave up, chance.
How do you find their chances, Sean? The good old team there.
Good old team, but they're kind of coming on the radar a bit, I think, this year, to be honest. I've only seen them once. And, like, they could get a run out of the winner, but then if you don't, it's not kind of a surprise either, you know. So nice mix of players there, fair tortoise, and they come from all over the place. So against Arscoll, it's always going to be a tough battle. But just going back in the point there, I thought Cash would have put a better score than that. Like, just when I was following the score in line, I kind of surprised tortoise kind of got ahead so early and kept leading, extended again, you know, which was, I didn't see that coming. But it's good to have Cash at that grade, and they'll be stronger in the years to come, for sure.
And they're the last school left with the flag flying in the Hearty Cup, Mina. CBS played De La Salle yesterday there on bench. I was at really disjointed performance from them. They have a decent team on paper. Like, they pushed Arscoleraish to nearly beat Arscoleraish in the first game. Other than Sean Kennelly there in the forwards, really, they didn't have much of a punch. I think they only scored 3 points from play out of the 16 points they scored there. McCarthy scored 12 frees and they scored a sideline as well. So De La Salle looked a lot better team. Paddy Fitzgerald was playing for them. He was the talk of the town there the last couple of weeks after Ballygunner. Apparently, if he was of the age, if the grade wasn't changed for minor, he'd have been on that Ballygunner team, which is just frightening enough. And I seen him then and again. He's a class operator. He's centre forward there from, so they're absolutely churning out quality players in Ballygunner all the time, aren't they? But look, Turles flying the flag. They've Arscoleraish in the semi final and De La Salle going to the other semi-final against St. Joseph's Tulla, which is their first time at that stage, which is a great achievement. Just one thing, lads, before we leave it. Last four of the Hearty Cup, no Cork team in it. That's a bit of a surprise, Stephen, isn't it? They've been very strong at minor for the last few years.
Yeah, it is a strange one, all right, but I suppose it is a credit to the other schools, you know, getting their houses in order, getting their work done, and getting better and getting stronger and not leaving it to one dominant area. I suppose it's good for hurling overall that there's more teams competing. And unfortunately for Cork, they're nowhere to be seen in these semi-finals.
There's no harm. Right, lads, we'll go to the under-21 county final. We'll review the semi-finals first. Stephen, we'll stick with you. So Mullinahone, you have a man playing centre back there. If he had a good win over Cap White Gales, who probably that was their first match of the year, so they were coming in a bit cold. it was a good win for Mullinahone.
Good win for Mullinahone, yeah. And in the County A, under 21 A final is brilliant achievement for Mullinahone. Like they wouldn't have the biggest pick, you know. Like they're relying on a few lads that their main men would have been under 21 3 or 4 years ago. You know, so like they're relying on lads at different age groups to make the under 21. So it's brilliant for them. They had a good tough game in the semi final or in the south final, sorry, leading into it as well. That would have done them the world of good in a cold old day over in the Swan Field. Not sure the name, it was in the Park Nahalli or something. But they had a real good game against St. Mary. So Cabaway coming in cold wouldn't have done them any favours. And Mullinahone had a real tough game going into it. And so they'll have a right old crack at Mike Harkey now, and it should be a cracking final.
The Cap of White look a bit rusty on the day, or did it were the snow to get into it?
On that match, no, I didn't get to that match, and I'm at losing my report on it. So I'm searching there before the team started. I was losing my report in the South Final and the county semi final. So the whole terrible amateur.
There's some good operators though on that Mullinhone team. Obviously you've Conor Whelan centre back there, Martin Keogh, the O'Dwyer is Mikey O'Shea. That's a fairly good spine of a team.
Yeah, yeah. For me, look, I know it's biased, but Connor's the key, I think, at centre back. And for just the couple of points on the South Final, I think where they turned, St. Mary's did everything they could to avoid him, and even bringing the centre forward all the way out the field. And it was working for him. It was working for him. But as Connor grew into the game, then in the second half especially, like, Mullinhone, they're devils for keeping the scoreboard ticking over. And they went in at half-time, I think 5 or 6 points up. But you wouldn't have thought, you know, St. Mary's were very good in the first half and the final. But in the second half, they put a man in on him and he dominated. He dominated the game. And then you have Martin Fogarty in midfield. Martin Fogarty is a senior hurler. Now, we've a couple of years, he's inexperienced, very experienced hurler. And he really came to the fore in the second half. They really took over. Mikey O'Shea, now was a little bit quiet for my liking, you know. And as I said, last me notice, they had a corner forward. His name escapes me. But in the first half, when Mullinhone were under pressure, he was brilliant. He was the go-to man.
Ron O'Dwyer, no?
Could have been O'Dwyer. Yellow helmet.
I think he had a yellow helmet.
Yeah, and he was outstanding. But they just work. They just work and work and work, and you know, and I think where Mike Harkey might probably be favourites hurling wise, they certainly won't outwork Mullinhone next week.
Yeah. So we have Mike Harkey, as you say, in the final. They had a very tight win against Killadangan. It took a last minute Kyle Shelley goal in literally an injury time to do the business. Jamie and Sean, did you catch a bit of this, or did you hear much on the grapevine after?
I was talking to a lady yesterday morning who wasn't very hopeful. She's a McGarkey woman to the core now, and she wasn't very hopeful for the weekend because said they have a couple of injuries. So I didn't hear anything other than that. I'd be very surprised. I'm sure it would have been nationwide news at this stage. But now I know they lost Kevin Hayes to a cruciate last year, which is Kevin would be a big loss. He'd been playing probably centre back. He'd be county minor, county under 21. That McCarthy team is a super team. It's their great white hope for the last couple of years. They've won everything up along. But look, as Stephen said, you can't beat work rate.
You can't outwork
Mullinhone. It doesn't matter how good they are. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? If you don't have the ball, you can't score. I don't know. It's hard one to call. As a neutral, you'd like to see Mullinhone win it. I don't know, when was the last time they won it, Stephen? Have they ever won it? Did Kelly win it back then?
Surely we're in the ballpark when the two Kellys were there, yeah?
I think so. We had the stats there. We had all the stats there a little while ago, and he said the notes are gone. They had it all. it's terrible.
Don't worry, please
invite me back.
you're the first person to ever have notes on this show, don't worry.
I don't remember them winning, to be honest. Now, I wouldn't be surprised if they did, but I'd say it's a while ago since they did win it, if they did win it. You'd love to see a new club win it. McCarthy, I'm sure, have their eyes on it as a next step forward for this panel of players. They're a team that's definitely coming, that's for sure.
Did I read a one on Premier View that this McCarthy team haven't lost a game since 14?
Yeah, I'd say so.
They're beating us in a county final under 14 and a county semi final under 16. That team, did they win the minor, the county final? Did it?
Drum won the beat.
That's phenomenal going for any team.
So like they've been on the go, and they just know how. And to be honest, judging when, at that game against Killadangan, they were getting. I won't say it, but the ref has been very hard on them the whole match. And they were kind of up against it for the whole thing, and they just stayed going. And to be honest with you, they were full value for the win. I know the last minute goal was a bit dubious. Kyle Shelley looked to have fouled the keeper it was kind of a looping ball and the keeper got stuck in the ground in front of him. Kyle Shelley came in and steamrolled him, to be honest, and knocked the ball into the net. But they've a very good scatter of players. They've lads that can hurl all over there. Jack Fallon, their midfield, was very impressive. Max Hackett was quiet.
He's another man to step up for Tip, hopefully, in the next year or two.
Dara Butler from Kildang kept him very quiet. He was kind of hanging out of him the whole match. But they're a very solid team. There's not really a bad hurler there. And Kyle Shelley, in fairness to him, now was their best player on the day. He scored 2 or 3 points from play and he scored that winning goal when they were up against it. So, very good team, Sean. And they'll be hard to beat in the final, won't they?
Yeah, and I was talking to a neutral yesterday now. He was Thurles man. So he'd be fairly neutral. And he goes, the ref absolutely roared McCarthy. He says, we're 4-30. And this lad now wouldn't be fond of McCarthy either. You know, so.
Because nothing here is ours, man.
Yeah, so, like, my guys are worthy for a win. Like, should have been a couple points even more ahead. Not to, but they've bet everything in front. Like, I thought they'd struggle. I mean, they're not struggling a bit, but I thought teams would kind of come up to their level, to be honest. Mm. Holy Cross Drummer says we haven't, to be honest. So, that's kind of disappointing from our point of view and other clubs. But they've kind of went the hard way about, like, winning a tough media look at beating the North Champions. Like, it's, you know, they'll earn it.
Beating a Kildangan team that are winning left, right and centre and they don't know how to lose matches. So it'll be hard for Mullinahoe in the final. I'd probably fancy Mike Harkin myself in the final.
It's on in Golden, is it?
It's on in Golden. It's on Saturday at 1:30 in Golden.
Right,
For Golden, they carp out there. Jesus Christ.
Yeah, it's a lovely pitch. So that it should be a good game. I'd fancy Mike Harkin myself in that one. Who do you think will win it, lads? Stephen, you're obviously going for Mullinahoe.
I don't know if I'm going for them, but it's in the DNA. They just don't stop. You see with the senior team last year, going up against Barnsley, nobody gave them a hope. And they scared the shit out of Barnsley. This crowd, they just do the right things. You know, they work so hard for each other. And although Mikey O'Shea might be, let's say, he might be the star in the forward line, it's like as if they're all stars, but they're all workers. You know, if one lad is in the better position, he'll get the ball. You know, and they'll just tap it over. I played Mullinahoe down the years, and I've never seen a team, even when I go watch them in the South, never see a team as good as them to just keep the scoreboard ticking over. You know, and they have Owen Kelly over them, and that's what he's telling them. Keep that scoreboard ticking over. You know, and the more times they'd come in and you'd be thinking they haven't done anything in the game, but they have 10 points on the board without you knowing. You know, and I think that's where, look, the Mike Harkey are probably a better team, but I would not be surprised if Mullinahoe pull it out of the fire. Okay. So, because a mate of mine, Connor's on the Mullinahoe, I'm going to go with Mullinahoe.
I'm sure the two Sarah's boys are shouting for Mike Harkey Burris, all out with the flags and bunting hanging out and everything.
Oh, without a doubt. I'm painting the house tomorrow red and yellow.
do you fancy him to win it, lads?
I would, yeah. I think they know how to win games, like, you know what I mean? They're winning so consistently over the last number of years, they'll know how to grind out a result. I'd have to say McCarthy are probably going to be to win it, yeah.
I'd be the same thinking as well, but again, it's the final hurdle, and as Stephen said there, like, Mullinahoe against Bursley came in not in fear. They just keep ticking that scoreboard over, but McCarthy by a few, but like, it's going to be a dogfight, to be honest.
Yeah. We'll go on to, we'll move slightly away from the under-21, but not completely. We've seen there during the week, lads, Cashel under the under-21 appeal was rejected by the West Board or the County Board. They released a statement then. It was pretty loaded. I reckon that they've been hard done by. What do you think, Sean? Is this the right decision or do they have a case?
I just think it's just parking. Get, like, to be honest, they're not going to go back and play the county same. That's done. Like, play the West and whatever. But, like, I hear so many things, and even their statement they wrote on Facebook there the day of the game being given a walkover, that was kind of a bit, not silly, but kind of, you know, didn't really think spur of the moment. And some of the comments on Twitter and Facebook since were kind of fucking stupid. You know, like, could have done it a better way. And as some people kind of warned, it's actually Cash's best friends during the year either. So, you know, there are a lot of people against them. But if they've right to, if they feel like they're being hard done by and everything's done by the book, fair enough, investigate. But otherwise, park aside, like.
What do you think, Jamie? Is this just take your medicine now? Just with things the way they are?
I think it is. I think it's a case of take your medicine. Nothing's going to happen from here on. It's like arguing with a referee. He just doesn't change his mind. You know, I think the appeal went in. Wasn't successful. Sorry, lads. We just have to move on. You know what I mean? There's no point getting tied up in knots over it. But we just move on.
And probably the team to lose out most is Cap of White, Stephen, and all this. They didn't get to celebrate actually winning OS final, and they went into a county semi-final completely cold.
Yeah.
And you would feel sorry for them. Like, this is under 21 grade, last ever under age hurling for a lot of them lads.
Mm.
You know, award of the final, as I say, went in cold. And the next, like, they probably feel that if we had that West final played and we won, we'd been in a better position going into the semi final. So, like, it's the title to them now it means nothing. It doesn't mean much to them at all, like, you know. But as I agree with Jamie there, the decision was made, the appeal was lodged, and they didn't win. Just it's time to move on from it now.
And you said there's two teams affected, like, because Capway and Cash the boat lost out from, you know, like, when you look at it overall, like, you know, so it's knocked on there. You say, as in, if Capway that game against one at home going different, or even win the final, lifting the cup, having the celebrations, like, it's, you know, lads looking forward to, so kind of ruined, ruined 50 players there, you know, like,
absolutely.
I think Cash felt ahead of case, Sean, because they've had a lot of bad press recently, and you're just thinking to yourself, if you were pulling the dark arts here and trying to get the match off, like, just hold your powder and just take your medicine, because it's like they're under the cosh all over the county. People have their eyes on them for the last year with all the transfers going in. So they just kept their head down and just accepted it.
Yeah, they seem to have grown a seat in the boardroom this stage, really, on the appeal court. If maybe you've kept your head down the first few days and the game was given, kind of work behind the scenes, maybe, and get it on, like, I don't know what was said in boardrooms and appeals, you know, you won't even know, but it's kind of, as you say, good on one extra. But just disappointing, kind of finished the year for a grade that's no longer, like.
Yeah. It's a pity, lads. I was at that game the other day, and it's a fantastic grade, Jamie, and it's a pity to see the end of it for the moment, anyway. It's given nothing but entertainment over the years, hasn't it?
Yeah, look, I'm saying it for years, and I think it's quite possibly, over the last number of years, has been the best grade. Senior included, because there was so many hammerings there for a long time. The under 21 grade, going back over the last number of years, like, it always seems to play at the worst time of year, with the, you know, the fittest, most skillful hurlers playing in the muck and the shit. Like,
yeah,
you go back, my own father was involved with the Sarsies back in the late 80s, and they won a county under 21 Christmas week or the week after Christmas. Like, so nothing has changed in 30 years, and now they've just decided to get rid of the grade. Which is absolutely madness, if you ask me.
Yeah.
The grades should never have been changed in the first place, but getting rid of the 21 grade is just crazy.
Yeah, fingers crossed that won't be the end of it anyway. In the next few years, maybe it'll be.
But the problem is, people are sent to the board, to the meeting, not knowing what they're voting on.
That's the problem.
The club decided, but the club sent fucking Johnny Ryan. Then they'd vote on whether they want one grade or two grades at 19-20. Then they'd pick the correct grade, and they picked 19. So, like, I just think clubs aren't prepared for, like, we had our own discussion above them in the club, but, you know, but a lot of clubs mightn't have had a discussion at all, or even told that going voting what they're voting on. Like, this is the problem in this county, and the county board were happy with that, because if they're pushing it, they're happy out. Yeah, everyone else not knowing what's happening either. So it's going to be looked upon again, but if they vote again tomorrow, it'll be unanimous to keep. That's the problem.
That has to be kept.
Yeah, absolutely.
My name is Thomas Conway. I'm a new contributor, but I'm happy to join the party. And more importantly, with me this evening is multiple All-Ireland winning Tipperary hurler, former Nenagh County title winning captain Conor O'Donovan. Conor, you're very welcome along.
Thanks very much, Thomas. Thank you very much for having me on board.
Yeah, now, obviously, you have a very accomplished career in the game, but specifically the issue we want to address here tonight, you've raised it in the media in recent years, and that is the rule of the hand pass. Can you just explain to people your arguments, the issues you think which the hand pass is creating, and the proposed rule change which you're advocating for?
Right. Well, if you like, Thomas, even to go back as far as 2008, I was watching an All-Ireland Camogie final, junior Camogie final on the television. And one of the teams, it was Clare, scored a goal later on in the game, and by way of, the player was standing virtually on the goal line, and to me it looked like they threw the ball into the net, but it's obviously deemed a hand pass. But to my reckoning at the time, I thought that looked like a throw, and so the goal was allowed. Now, I actually raised it, believe it or not, at that time, a few weeks later, with a senior official in Croke Park. I highlighted it as a possible issue going forward, and asked if maybe the Hurling Development Committee at the time might maybe have a look at it, because I put forward at the time a possible solution to this problem. And there was a bit of toing and froing with this senior official in Croke Park, and he assured me that the Hurling Development Committee would consider my proposal, but look, nothing ever came of it. Roll on a few years then, around 2017, I began to notice that there was a bit more what I looked like throwing of the ball going on, in terms of, if you like, an illegal hand pass, and wasn't really being penalised by the referees. So as a result of it not being penalised, I felt it was starting to creep into the game more and more. So I had a look at the rules, the technical playing rules of the hand pass, we'll say in the GAA's technical hurling rule book. Yeah. And there are two rules, if you like, governing the hand pass that will state that it's a foul. And one is rule 4.2a, and it states that it's a foul to throw the ball. And rule 4.2b states it is a foul to hand pass the ball without it being released and struck with a definite striking action of the hand.
Yeah.
And I began to notice that more and more players were actually, they were offloading the ball from the same hand that the ball was in. And to me, there wasn't a clear striking action happening. So that was in an effect, that was a throw. So it was in contravention of both these rules. And
well, in other words, you feel it was damaging the integrity of the game, basically. Is that what you're saying?
It's damaging, first of all, the integrity of the rules of the game, right? Because the rules state it's a foul, basically, to throw the ball. So obviously somebody along the way, somebody I would imagine in a coaching position, identified, if you like, the potential weakness of these two rules and how they could be exploited to good effect by players and teams accordingly. That, you know, obviously it's quicker way, you know, to offload the ball by way of throwing it than to engage in a clear striking action with the hand.
So are you suggesting teams are willfully exploiting the rule that they're setting out to throw the ball, so to speak, or make a very subtle motion?
I think the fact that it's happening more and more often, Thomas, and players, teams are getting away with it, they recognise that they're getting away with it. I think it's fair to say they are doing it deliberately at this stage. Now, an example of this really is, I've been speaking with some coaches of underage players over the past while. I've been speaking to a number of coaches, and they've been trying to stress to their players, they're under sixes, they're under eights, they're under tens, that it's a foul to throw the ball, right? And the message they're getting back from those players is, well, hold on, sure, all the top players are actually throwing it and getting away with it, all right? So now, those coaches are caught in a tricky situation. They're now, if you like, in a conflicted, they are conflicted. Do they encourage their players to throw the ball, or do they stress on them to continue to try and hand pass the ball properly? And if they do that, continue to stress to them to continue to hand pass the ball properly, they're actually putting their players and their teams at a competitive disadvantage.
Okay.
Right? So, that's an issue then going forward. We can come back to that shortly.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, obviously there are developmental issues there, but I'm just wondering, how prevalent do you feel it is? Do you feel that this is just has become a common feature of intercounty hurling, or is it prevalent in club hurling as well?
It is prevalent at intercounty hurling at all levels, Thomas. is prevalent at club hurling at all levels, and is prevalent, I hear anecdotally, in schools and colleges hurling. Right. So, you know, it and unfortunately, it is quite obvious that the rules as they currently are unenforceable by the referees. They're clearly unenforceable. A case in point would be where you have a player in possession of the ball and you have other players positioned between that player and the referee. So the referee's view of how the player in possession of the ball has offloaded the ball from the hand is obstructed. So how can he tell if that ball was hand passed, we'll say, legally or illegally? So he has to basically make a guess on it. And in that instance, it's like as if he's officiating the game blindfolded. And another example of where the referees are, if you like, unable to see how the ball was offloaded is if the player in possession of the ball has his back to the referee. So now the referee's view of the ball in the player's hand is clearly obstructed as well. So he can't tell how the ball has been offloaded by that player, how it has been hand-passed. Has it been done legally or illegally? So the referee has to make a guess then, effectively, and sometimes he'll guess it rightly, sometimes he'll guess it wrongly. Now, I do think that that is unfair on the referees, but also unfair on the players, that you have that situation where the referee has to guess whether the ball has been hand-passed legally or illegally.
Right,
so
yeah.
That's why I started giving this issue some thought, and I tried to figure out, would there be a way to rectify this manner or this problem in a manner that was fair and easy to implement. And so I then, if you like, devised or came up with the wording of a rule. Now, so like upon discussing this issue with different people, some people would have been saying to me, look, the best thing to do is to ban the hand pass altogether.
Okay, but you're not for that.
I think that's a bit extreme. I don't think it's necessary. Okay. I've come up with a proposed solution that will just, if you like, ban one aspect of the hand pass options that exist. And that would be, and I'll give you the wording that which I presented to Croke Park last August. All right. Yeah. The wording that is that he will state that it is a foul to either hand pass the ball or palm the ball directly from the same hand that is holding the ball. Right?
Okay, so now, and you have in fairness provided visuals, video footage, which is quite helpful. We'll put it up, I hope, with the podcast, just demonstrating the rule which you've outlined. But yeah, no, proceed.
Right. So I'm not saying to ban the hand pass altogether. What I'm saying is it's simply a foul to either hand pass the ball or palm the ball directly from the same hand that is holding the ball. Now, how players adapt to that rule then after that is up to themselves. All right. Some people seem to of concern or kind of interpreting that I'm saying that they have to hand pass the ball with the other hand. That's not the case. There are other options available to players to do that. But if they want to hand pass the ball from the other hand, as the video clips I forwarded to you have demonstrated, it's quite simple to do. When you're looking at it, if you like, engaging in a two-handed hand pass of the ball, it's simply a case of transferring the hurley from the hand that is already holding the hurley over to the other hand. And it's quite simple to do. And that's one hand pass skill that would still remain, along with multiple other hand passing skills. But we're seeing fewer amounts of those these times, Thomas, being executed, because players are, by and large now, you know, hand passing the ball from the same hand that the ball is in, you know?
And leading
to quite often being thrown.
Yeah, and you've obviously invested a lot of thought into it. And you know, they are very interesting proposals. What strikes me, I guess, and I think what a lot of people will be thinking is, you know, is this an inevitable consequence of the tempo of the modern game? The fact that things have just become so fast and furious out there that a change such as this could damage that factor, you know, could slow down the game, if not intentionally. How would you respond to that?
I could say possibly one or two things there, Thomas, right? First of all, as things stand, the way the game is actually being played now, with it being hand-passed so much, the tempo of the game has actually slowed down.
Okay.
Believe it or not, the tempo of the game has actually slowed down. All right.
Because it's a short passing game, essentially. Is that it?
That's it. And the ball is effectively, it's not been struck by the hand. Okay, we'll say prior to the throwing of the ball becoming more and more commonplace, generally, when a player got the ball, he looked to strike it with the hurley and move it on straight away.
Central Stadium, an iconic sporting venue. As part of a major fundraising drive, My Stadium Seat is offering you the chance to place your name or the name of someone who loves GAA on a seat at the Field of Legends. Packages from €100 include seat naming plaques, certs of authenticity, online biographies, and open day tickets. Show your support or make someone's Christmas. Visit mystadiumseat.com. Semple Stadium, where every name matters.
Connor, I have to say, you're slowly winning me around to your argument, but let's pick up where we left off. The question of rooks and melees in the game and the impact which the hand pass is having on that. What are your thoughts on that specifically?
Yeah, specifically, I do believe the illegal hand pass now, or if you like, the hand pass from the same hand that the ball is in, is contributing quite significantly to the formation of these rooks, as we call them, in hurling now. Because, if you like, what's the primary goal of players these days is to secure possession of the ball. Now, if the ball is on the ground, and the player who's first to the ball, what he's doing now, he's standing when he gets there and roll lifting it, or at least attempting to roll lift it. And in standing and pausing for that moment, it's allowing other players to come in and tackle him and prevent the ball from being lifted into that player's hand. And more players pile in onto it, and they're all then trying to roll lift the ball. Okay, and it's, if you like, then you have all this cluster of players there, and the whole team becomes a rook. Now, what's happening there as well is it's contributing to the pace, or if you like, the tempo of the game slowing down.
Okay.
Now, if you like, the rule that I'm proposing to be introduced was introduced, I would see a significant reduction, if not a complete elimination, of these rooks. Because then, if you like, the focus then of the player who's running to the ball on the ground will be to jab lift it on the run and stay moving with it. All right, because the option won't be there so much anymore. If he was to get the stand, be standing there and get the ball into his hand, the option to throw it out to, a teammate, won't be there. All right, because of the cluster of players. Whereas now the focus then will be on to stay moving with the ball when he jab lifts it on the run and stays moving.
Okay, it's an interesting point. I can see what you mean. And I suppose it's important to state again that, you're not proposing outlawing the hand pass. There still will be an option there to hand pass the ball. It's just the technique or the motion will be different.
Well, you see, there's plenty of other hand passing options in the game, Thomas. There's over six hand passing options, maybe up to eight as it is in the game. All right. So all I'm proposing is that one element of that those hand passing options be made illegal, or if you like, to be made a foul. And in doing so, in order to help the referees be able to determine if a foul was committed or not, because for the reason I outlined earlier, their view of the player in possession of the ball is sometimes obstructed, or their view of the ball in the player's hand is also obstructed. And they have to engage in guesswork to decide if the ball was hand passed legally or illegally. Okay, so what I'm doing is I'm making it easy for the referees to adjudicate on this issue.
Okay, right. Take your point. I'm just thinking though, Yeah, yes. Okay. Go on. You go on.
Well, I was going to say as well, I do believe it's also a significant contributor to a lot of fouling in the game at the moment. When a player gets the ball into his hand now, there's a strong tendency to take on an opponent, all right, to run into the tackle in the hope of engineering a free. All right, so if perchance the referee doesn't award him a free, or if he can't break clear of the tackle, all is not lost because he can still just offload the ball to a teammate who's running in support. All right, and that's an area then, if you like, that has, if you like, has been impacted by the illegal hand pass.
Okay.
And,
okay.
And what I'm proposing now is that if my rule was introduced, I think players in possession of the ball would now think twice of running into the tackle, because it'll be much more difficult for them to offload the ball if they're tackled and they're not being awarded a free by the referee.
Yeah, I can certainly see that. Yeah, I can see your point of view. I think what a lot of people might fear, a lot of people listening, they might sense, would there be a danger that you could unintentionally eliminate the hand pass from the game? I mean, even though it may still be legal, but the fact that it is maybe more difficult to pull off, that it would lead to an elimination. I'm thinking of, off the top of my head, I'll pick what Noel McGrath in the All-Ireland final back in 2010. He played Lar Corbett in with, you know, this beautiful hand pass kind of turn around. Keane Lynch, you know, a lot of his play revolves around quick hands and that. People will probably be wary of that threat, but you don't think that will happen. You think without introducing this rule, the game will continue to slow down, the rucks will continue to deteriorate, and your rule will amend that or will rectify that?
Well, okay, the two areas I've spoken about there, the rucks and the running into the tackle, okay, they become, if you like, byproducts of the illegal hand pass. Okay, the fundamental issue here is this: players are now throwing the ball, okay, which is a foul. And the reason they're throwing the ball is because they're offloading it from the same hand that the ball is in. And you use the term there, quick hands. Quick hands are fine, Thomas. But if you're throwing the ball, that's a foul. It might be quick, but it's a foul. End of. Okay, so it should be a free. So referees are being asked in a lot of instances to guess whether the ball was thrown or whether it was properly hand passed. All right, and having to guess is unfair on referees, as I've said already. It's also unfair on the players. That should not be the case. The rules should be clear cut, and they should be enforceable.
Okay.
And the current rules of in relation to hand passing are unenforceable, regardless of what anyone says. And the word I'm getting from Croke Park is that Central Council will be writing to all the hurling counties this year to tell them that the officiating referees in games will be encouraged strongly to enforce the rules, the hand pass rule, for the coming year. Now, you know, I'm a small bit dismayed at that, because that in effect means that it's just going to be a continuation of the same. Now, in 2019, I appeared on RTE 6.1 News raising the hand pass issue. Also on that segment was Willie Barrett from Tipperary, who then was the referees hurling development committee chairman. Okay. And Willie was asked about the problem with the hand pass in the game. And he said that the committee, the referees development committee, were encouraging all referees to start being more vigilant on this issue. Okay, so now, back in 2019, the GAA decided that they would, try and take firmer or sterner action on the illegal hand pass. But what has happened? Nothing improved in 2019. Nottingham prove in 2020 and Nottingham prove in 2021. In fact, everything, the whole thing has just deteriorated. So, as I say, I'm a bit dismayed to hear that the GAA are basically looking to continue with the way things are, rather than take decisive action on trying to fix this problem.
Right. So clearly, you're quite frustrated with the central authorities, really. Is that fair to say?
I'd be disappointed about that, Thomas. Now, so I have written to Croke Park and asked them to, if you'd like, to ask the Central Council to reconsider their decision and to give my proposed solution more serious consideration with a view to putting it forward to Congress for it to be voted on. Now, I haven't got any feedback from Croke Park as of yet, but I think it is just illogical for the GAA just to continue to do the same thing and expect, you know, to achieve different results when the last 3 years have shown that's not possible.
Right. And I sense from chatting to you off air that one of the most important aspects of this to you, and I think in fairness, a lot of people will share this view, is the question of underage players and the development of players, that if something isn't done quickly here, it will lead to the rule being abused by, you know, youngsters coming up and through the ranks. That is particularly important.
Well, that's a major issue going forward, Thomas. Like, as things stand now, the young hurlers, who are, as you say, the future of the game, they're receiving mixed messages about the hand pass, both verbally and visually. Hmm. Verbally, and if you like, rightly so, their coaches are telling them it is a foul to throw the ball. Hmm. However, visually, they're seeing all the adult players in particular, and also those at inter-county level, and particularly the games that they see on television, they're seeing them throwing the ball the whole time and they're not being penalized. So straight away, they're receiving mixed messages, all right? And like, so it's like this, whatever happens in inter-county games will be copied by hurlers in club and college games. It is called imitation. It is how most skills are learned and adopted. The child imitates the star, the young adult imitates the star. The stars make the skills look cool and trendy. And right now, they're getting away with throwing the ball, and that looks cool and trendy to the youngsters, regrettably. Okay. So I think it is seriously incumbent on the GAA as a national sporting organization to address this issue and resolve it decisively. You can't have an organization the size of the GAA allowing mixed messages to be communicated down to all the ranks and down to the very underage, down to players under six. You can't allow that to continue.
Okay, well, whatever about the GAA at administrative level, have you sensed, do you get a sense anecdotally that there is desire to change this rule, from speaking to players, managers, even, you know, coaches at younger age teams in particular? Is the desire there to implement such a rule change? Because it is pretty fundamental. You know, the hand pass has been a feature of the game for forever, really. So this is a fundamental rule change.
Yes, it is. But once again, it's a small rule change that would have a huge beneficial effect. Right now, during last year, I spoke to a number of former hurlers. Just let me say, I did not speak with any current players nor any current coaches or managers, because that would be unfair to them, to put them in an awkward position.
Yeah, fair. All right.
Okay. So, because they couldn't be seen to say, yeah, the hand passing or the throwing of the ball is a problem. Because then that would mean that their players and their teams would have to be curtailing it, which would be putting them at a disadvantage, competitive disadvantage. Mm-hmm. So I spoke with a lot of genuine hurling supporters, but I also spoke with a number of former inter-county hurlers who are not involved with any teams. All right. I'll give you some examples. Eddie Kerr of Kilkenny, Noel Lane of Galway, Justin McCarthy from Cork, Michael Cleary and Declan Carr from Tipperary, Joachim Kelly from Offaly, Desi Donnelly from Antrim, Peter Murphy from Galway. These are all former inter-county hurlers. They won All-Ireland medals. They received All-Stars. There's even a couple of All-Ireland winning captains there among them. And all of them signed a petition in support of my proposed solution to this problem. And that's I set myself a target of 100 signatures. And once I got 100 signatures, I delivered it to Croke Park. I delivered my proposal along with the petition of support signed by all these people.
Okay.
All right. Because they are very much in favor of two things. They see the throwing of the ball as a problem, but they also see my proposed solution as a viable solution.
Okay, yeah, and they're, you know, all big names, no more than yourself. I suppose, and in fairness to you, you've addressed this in other interviews. People are going to be inclined to say, well, and forgive me now, I'm, you know, this is just a bunch of, this is just a bunch of owl lads, you know, they want the game like it was in their day. That's the argument that I'm sure has been leveled at you. So how would you respond to people who make that critique?
Well, first and foremost, let me just say that they weren't the only people who signed the petition. A lot of just, you know, general hurling supporters, people who may never have really played the game, but like watching it. And they despair at seeing the ball being thrown in hurling now, right? Despair at seeing it being thrown and also not being penalised by the referees, all right? So if a foul is being committed, it doesn't make any difference whether, you know, it's people who are retired from the game who are calling it, or whether it's the genuine supporters. If a foul has been committed and it's not been penalised, the problem has to be fixed.
Okay.
End of story. The problem has to be fixed. It just can't be left. I put it like this. It, for me and a lot of people, okay, it is a constant distraction which takes from the enjoyment of watching a game of hurling being played now. That's what it is. It's a constant distraction. And not just for me, but hurling followers all over the place.
Okay. Well, you mentioned that you didn't expect change to come this year. Certainly, there has been no indication that there will be change. Looking towards the future, I mean, do you see a prospect that, you know, that your campaign will be listened to or will be adopted by the central authorities? Can you see that happening? Or, you know, is your position a grim one at present?
At this point in time, I retain a little bit of hope that the GAA might take on board my solution, my proposed solution this year, and have it submitted to Congress to be voted on. If not, we're going to have a continuation of the same this coming year in the hurling scene. But I will continue to endeavour to build more support for my proposed solution and endeavour to have it submitted in due, you know, in subsequent or to subsequent congresses down along the line. Because the situation as it is, Thomas, is unsustainable. You know, you just can't let the throwing of the ball continue indefinitely. And it would be very irresponsible of the GAA to do so. So inevitably, a change will come. Inevitably. Now, as you say, I can't say what it'll be this year, next year, the year after, but inevitably a change will come because the amount of people who are becoming more and more aware and conscious of it, of this, you know, rule infraction, as they call it, is growing. Okay, and they're starting to make their voices and their feelings known about it.
Okay.
So I just can't see how the GAA can continue to ignore it indefinitely.
Well, look, Conor, it's been a fascinating discussion. I have to say, I'll be honest, I was sceptical coming into it. You've sort of won me round. You know, I don't know what others will think, but we look forward to hearing their feedback. But it certainly is a fascinating topic. And, you know, we really appreciate you coming on and chatting to us here. So thank you very much for that.
Thank you very much, Thomas, for having me on your show. And maybe we might speak again in the future. So all the best for now.
Absolutely. Thanks a million, Conor.
Bye-bye.
And that's all we have time for on this week's show. Stay tuned to all our social media channels for our minor football and hurling teams of the year. And we'll be back in the next few weeks to preview the National League campaigns and the rest of the action in Tip GAA. Thanks for joining us, Tipper Donabu.
Thanks, guys. Good luck.
Down, boys.
Cheers, boys.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.